Thanks, everyone. So I'm here today to speak about the investigation at Fraser Shipyards in Superior, Wisconsin, for lead exposure, and that's going to be the, and this is the ship that was involved in that. So I'd also like to recognize my co-authors. This was really a team effort. I just sort of drew the straw that made me present today. It was a very large group and worked across state borders with Minnesota. So Stephanie Yandel is here. Luke is here, which is great. And then all of these other folks at our health department, but also there are a lot of locals that aren't listed here that we worked with too. So it's a very big and involved process, which I'll try to tell you about. So basically, occupational lead exposure, you probably know a lot about this. Lead was banned from household paint in 1978, but you can still use it in maritime paint because it's got anti-corrosive properties. Shipyards, foundries, munitions work, there are other ways in which people can get exposed to lead. The estimate is about 1.5 million workers are at risk every year, and the annual costs are somewhere around $400 million. That includes direct costs, but also indirect costs like loss of productivity, things like that. I'm not going to get super into the detail here for all the potentials from lead exposure because we've actually had some of that information already, and that's great. So, but it's not good. You don't want to get lead poisoning. Also, a little bit, we've had some information about the ABLE system, so I won't get into detail there, but we Wisconsin is an ABLE state, and we do get data from labs that we send to the ABLE system, and we use the ABLE system to monitor things as well. So that was very instrumental in this investigation. So in December of 2015, the Herbert C. Jackson, it was a 690-foot freighter, arrived at the Fraser shipyards, and on January 4th, a team, or the workers there, began retrofitting the ship's engine room, which basically converting it from a steam engine to a diesel engine. On March 28th, 2016, Minnesota, from the Poison Control Center in Minnesota, received notification that there was an emergency department person who had a shipyard worker who had come in with a blood lead level over 60 micrograms per deciliter. So as you know, the NIOSH reference is, I think, 5, so this is really high. At the same time that this was happening, in Wisconsin, we also got notification of two workers that both had blood leads over 40. So that was really the start of the investigation. For those of you who are not familiar with Minnesota and Wisconsin geography, this I just screenshot from Google Maps here. At the tip of Lake Superior are two towns that are twin towns but in different states. And Superior is on the Wisconsin side. Duluth is on the Minnesota side. People probably are more likely to have heard of Duluth. It's larger and known for tourist attractions. Superior has some great tourist attractions too, but I'm not going to get into that right now. So the two largest hospitals in the area are in Duluth, and many of the workers were in Wisconsin, but also in Minnesota as well, that had traveled to the site to work on this. So the two states were destined to work together on this project. This is a map of where the workers' residences actually were. I'll get into more of the details about the sample, but this just gives you an idea of how far people were traveling from within both states and then even around the country to work on this specific project. This is a picture that appeared in a local newspaper, the Duluth News Tribune, in February of 2016, as some of the news of this outbreak isn't the right word, but investigation and just this poisoning event started to break. And this is actually taken from inside the engine room. And you can see the workers here. You can see where the engine's sections have been cut out. And you can notice that no one's actually wearing PPE. And you can imagine the amount of dust and different things that are debris that are going to be, you know, in this situation. So here's a little bit of an expanded timeline, now that you have sort of the context. As I said, that December was when the shipyard got the ship and started working on it. What we didn't realize at the time was that there was actually a concurrent investigation or an earlier investigation going on, but OSHA had been called in on account of some asbestos, some suspected asbestos contamination, and in that process had discovered lead. And I'm not sure all the details of that. I'm sure there are people who can understand the systems better than I can, but we weren't actually made aware by OSHA specifically. We found out through this other mechanism. I think maybe because it was an open investigation, or I don't know exactly how that works. So let me see what else is going on here. Excuse me. Oh, so then at the beginning of April, both Wisconsin's Department of Health and Minnesota Department of Health issued advisories for the, you know, regional, local public health agencies, tribal agencies, and all of that. And we also instituted in Wisconsin the incident command system or structure so that we could handle this situation because it was sort of unfolding quickly. Lots of data was coming in that there were many people who had been poisoned. There was worry about take-home lead and all of that. And then about that time in the beginning of April, we started doing the real follow-up surveys and getting in other types of information. And then the investigation really lasted until August of 2016, and even now we're still sort of doing some final pieces of it. So in terms of just putting the data together, getting the data published and things like that. So the objectives, well, I suppose I should start by saying that we defined a case as being greater than 5 micrograms per deciliter, and having worked in that time period, that was of interest, which was basically the end of December up until currently. And the target population was anyone who worked at Fraser, which could have been any number of people. There were direct employees, there were union members who came in as contract employees, there were contract employees who weren't union members, there were people who were involved in the cleanup after this became an issue. So there was a lot of different groups that were potentially exposed. So we set our objectives really to just determine the extent and severity, and then really to find out, what were the potential risk factors for these folks. So that was kind of the survey aspect of it. And then we were very interested in take-home lead and trying to make sure that there weren't exposures that were coming through that route. And trying to, it's really kind of amazing how all of that. So I consider that a major success. Successful implementation of our ICS system that was good for building capacity for these kind of events because they do happen. And then establishing connections with other groups, OSHA, but also Minnesota, and just these kind of things was very positive and rich. We had some challenges. The survey development, as I said, I think was a little bit crazy. We were trying to do it all at the same at the moment everything was running, and the folks who were going to be doing the interviews were chomping at the bit to get it. We didn't have anything in place at that point, so we could probably streamline that, and I'm kind of hoping that at the end one of the things that I can do is put together a really short version of it and get it in the file so that the next time somebody has to go and dig one out, that's the one they find and not the much longer one that we actually used. And so training was a big deal. As I said, local control, lots of little pieces there. Roles out of responsibilities and all of that, but ICS was very helpful with that. Representativeness, it wasn't perfect. We didn't get everybody. The delays led to us not getting some folks. There were certainly people who didn't want to respond. And the multicolon area that I talked about. So basically, the conclusions is that, there was this large exposure, and really it appears to come down to sort of PPE use, not proper measures being taken, and so that was an important piece. Hopefully Fraser will get their new safety thing in place, and this will work out better in the future. But I think that there's a lot of complications, potential complications there. That's a hard thing to keep going all the time, so it's something that, those controls and that type of those kind of systems need to be maintained, and so that timely reporting was really important. Us getting the information from the labs was essential. So I noticed that the ABLES is down to 28 from 41. I wasn't aware of that, So I would say that we should have more of that, right? That would be something that this is really important to be able to be getting the lab. Now, local states might still be getting that information, but again, this is very useful. PPE, proper engineering controls, so on and so forth. So we've got one MMWR notes from the field, so you can go check out if you want more information. We also are working on a publication that should be out, or it should be in submission relatively soon. And we're doing some continued outreach to the workers. We've got that publication, as I mentioned. The Maritime Center at NIOSH is using this as a case to do some education and community outreach, which is great. So thanks for our staff person, Barb, for making that connection. And after the and then we're also working on an after action report for the incident command system to sort of look at what went well, what didn't necessarily go as well, and how can we improve that things in the future. So thanks for your time today.